Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, I need you to pay close attention to this message. It is not an ad. This is about Canada Land, and this is about you. You need to know that the news crisis is about to get a lot worse. You've heard about the layoffs. We're about to have news closures. And it's very likely that we're going to be seeing the defunding of the CBC. Where are you going to get your information from? What can you do about this? You can support Canada Land. We need you to. And so for this month and this month only, you can become a Canada Land supporter and get everything our supporters get for just $2 a month. That is an almost 80% discount. The clock is ticking on this. It disappears at the end of the month, and then we will not offer it. We need your support. We need to keep news coverage alive in Canada. Go right now to canadaland.com/join. And thank you. This episode is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAMH. It's never an easy call with so many problems in the world to know where to direct the money that you donate when you want to help out in this world. But what I can tell you is that when you donate to CAMH, you're saving lives. We know about the opioid crisis. We know about the mental health crisis. They are doing the work. Help change mental health care forever. Your support will help CAMH build a future where no one is left behind. Donate at camh.ca/CanadaLand to help us treat addiction and build hope. This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by Tunnel Bear. Tunnel Bear is the simple VPN app that makes it easy to browse privately and enjoy a more open internet. You can try Tunnel Bear for free by visiting tunnelbear.com/CanadaLand. And this episode is also brought to you by Sock Club. You can find me in the club, Sock Club. I'm very sorry, but it is actually very pleasant to receive a new pair of socks in the mail every month. This holiday season, Sock Club is delivering the perfect gift experience, quality American-made socks. Go to sockclub.com, get 15% off using the discount code CanadaLand at checkout. Give Sock Club this holiday season. Colin Horgan.
Hello.
Toronto-based journalist.
Yes.
Founding editor.
And creator.
And sole staff member.
If I have a staff, yes, of Article Magazine.
Of Article Magazine. And yes. Full disclaimer.
Yep, former Trudeau speechwriter.
Okay.
Yep.
Welcome back to Canada Land Shortcuts.
Thank you.
This episode of Shortcuts is brought to you by Joel Grink, Rosemary Westwood, Jenna Ghanem Khaled, Sabrina Natarajan, Danon Sloan, Roxanne Houdon, Marcella de Jong, and Catherine Janicki. Catherine, why did you decide to be awesome?
Because I think it's important to analyze not just the content of the news and media, but how and why it's produced. And Canada Land does a great job of blending the two.
This episode is also brought to you by Tunnel Bear. Tunnel Bear are back because it is December, and for many Canadians, that means the holidays are on the horizon. That means you're probably traveling or away from home. You're using weird, sketchy Wi-Fi. You do not know whose servers your stuff is passing through. You need to anonymize that stuff if you're going to be doing any banking or if you are at all concerned about online security. Fortunately, Tunnel Bear can secure your internet connection no matter where you go. Just download the app on your laptop, tablet, or phone, turn it on, and your little bear tunnels to another internet connection somewhere else in the world, a completely secure, encrypted connection, the strongest level of encryption available. And for listeners of this podcast, you can try it for free. Go to tunnelbear.com/CanadaLand, and until the end of January, Canada Land listeners will get 20% off when they go from the free plan. If you need more bandwidth beyond what you get for free, put in the offer code CanadaLand when you sign up for the Grizzly plan, you'll get 20% off. Again, you can try this all out for free right now at tunnelbear.com/CanadaLand. Colin, I want to start. There's like, you know, a dozen stories of incredible importance in the news cycle this week or more. And yet I really feel like it's important to dig deep down into this incident that flared up a couple of days ago between Ezra Levant and a young journalist named Haley Germain. And I think a lot of people would consider that terrible folly, terrible editorial judgment to give this attention. But I don't think so. I think that this actually requires a lot of attention.
Well, tell me what happened.
So the context for this is that The Rebel has increasingly been operating as a political movement, as an organizer of these rallies in Alberta against the Notley government. And they recently had one that was somewhere between 1,000, 1,100 people, he claims, in a hotel conference room, where they were protesting the Notley carbon tax. There was a lot of media there. A local AM talk station sent a young reporter named Haley Germain, who I think is also in school. I think she's finishing up her post-secondary education.
Yep.
And she later talked about the experience on Rob Breckenridge's show. And here's a little bit about how she described it.
Well, we talked earlier in the program about this anti-carbon tax rally yesterday here in Calgary. About 1,000 or so people turned out for this at the Westin Hotel. And Haley Germain was there covering the rally yesterday. And at one point, it obviously got into some concerning territory.
One speaker went on stage and he pointed back to all the media, singling us all out. There was multiple outlets there. And essentially said that we don't care about Albertans and we only care about Kim Kardashian getting robbed. And people were glaring and booing, and it made us all feel a little uncomfortable, at which point I went into the hallway where I stayed for the majority of the rally. I was standing there kind of looking around, and a man walked up to me. He got very close to me. He looked me directly in the eye and said, "You're dead."
Okay, so that's a little bit of how she put it. And essentially, to my ear, what we heard there is a reporter just saying what happened.
Right.
I have no reason to believe, and I don't even find it credible that she would fabricate this encounter with the guy in the hallway.
Right.
That is the allegation that Ezra Levant made. He seized upon this. Now, I think that she sounds a lot more professional and a lot more like she's doing her job as a reporter in that clip. Her tweets were a little bit more offhand. I think that what happened, as I read it, is that, you know, she's a young reporter. She's been covering a number of things. And here she is at this event where all of a sudden the room gets whipped up into a frenzy against the media.
Right.
And she's the media.
Right.
And I can only imagine how that feels. I think it was probably a new experience to her. And her tweets were a bit more expressive of the emotion she felt of being the target or being felt to be the target. And she said that she received death threats, plural, which is a possible inconsistency with the story that she would later tell that was also seized upon. As soon as she's out with these tweets that she received threats, Ezra just clamps down.
Right. Ezra Levant.
Ezra Levant.
Yeah.
The rebel commander.
Correct. Yes.
He first goes after her on Twitter.
Yep.
And then he basically launches a full-scale Ezra campaign against this young reporter. I'll play you a little bit about he made one of his videos where he describes this event, and here's what that sounded like.
But then look at this tweet she wrote. Ready? She said, "But I got death threats. You're a reporter, Haley, and you have a recording device, a microphone, and a camera in your cell phone. Even if you missed the death threat when it happened, you didn't then take out your phone and take a picture of the suspect? The room was enclosed. There were bright lights. You could have walked up to one of a dozen cops and security guards. Her story is full of holes. I don't buy it. It doesn't add up. I've written to her. I've promised to set up a meeting with hotel security to go through the videos. I'm offering a $1,000 bounty. You know what the worst of this is? There actually are men in society who threaten women. And we should actually listen to women who make complaints. We should investigate. It's tough to come to any conclusion besides the one that the media are lying. Haley Germain is lying. AM 770 News Talk in Calgary is lying. And they just want to smear unemployed Albertans. Maybe I'm wrong."
Yeah.
Okay. So he issues a fatwa, like a rebel fatwa, where he registers her name as a URL, HaleyGermain.com,
yep.
And it links to all of his coverage of her, where he calls her a liar. that she smeared these poor Albertans.
But it's different than that, right? Like, he's not necessarily issuing a fatwa against her. To his credit, it's a bit more cunning than that, right? Like, he has circumvented the, like, direct attack.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And created a whole new narrative around this story. You know, I mean, think of him what you may. It's sort of impressive.
It's very sophisticated, actually, because there's this level.
It's very confusing.
It's this level of irony, and that was his response. I got in there. I was seeing the response that Haley Germain was getting.
Right.
Some of the tweets: lying, scum sucking. I hope you fail your exams, liar. Like, you know, and you know, just to deal with the facts. But, like, you know, he's like, hey, I'm just dealing with the facts here. If there was a death threat, why didn't you tell a cop?
Right.
Where there were so many cameras there, why didn't any camera pick it up?
Yeah.
That is simply not a credible counter.
It's like a woman saying, I was sexually assaulted on the street, and you saying, well, why didn't you find a police officer that was nearby? Police are everywhere. What's wrong with you?
Yeah, and his other side of it, well, I offered to make the footage available to her. Why didn't she come and go through it and try to pick out the person?
Yeah.
You can hear her very clearly on the show saying, look, this guy came up to me after he'd been riled up against the media, said, you're dead, and then continued on with his anti-media screed. And it was unclear to her whether, like, that also is a little bit like,
right,
you guys in the media are dead, the media is dying, or you're dead. She made the decision that she didn't want to take this up with the cops, and that's her right to do so.
Mm-hmm.
And this is being used as proof that it's a lie. So the idea is that she's like a duplicitous, like, if you really watch that full Ezra thing, it is 14 minutes of invective directed at one young individual, all with this conceit that she represents the mainstream media who hate you. And this is also something that Ezra has said. The mainstream media hate you.
Yeah. They have, obviously, he's got an economic interest in whipping up these, whoever it is that would, you know, take this seriously. But quite frankly, having worked in the media and in government, it always baffles me a little bit when people are convinced that a mass conspiracy like this would take place. Like, did the media send a student reporter? Like, the media, like, thought police, did they send a student reporter to this, you know, one rally to make sure that she cooks up a death threat? To make, like, it is beyond insane.
You can get into it if you want to see things through their perspective. They've been going through her history of tweets,
right,
trying to pluck out things that show that she's like a social justice warrior, snowflake, that she was victim signaling. They basically, these ideologies and these epithets, this language of it, is sort of self-fulfilling. If you're looking for the evidence of it, you find it.
Yeah.
And I think it's more than just an economic incentive. And there's something larger here and really disturbing that I don't want to laugh off. I got into it with Ezra. There's this disassembly of truth itself. They come back, well, then where's the proof? Where's the evidence? She's a reporter.
Right.
So we're at a point now where if a reporter goes to an event and witnesses something with their own eyes, mm-hmm, and tells you what they saw,
mm-hmm,
then a legitimate response is, well, where's the proof?
So journalists need to wear body cameras is what you're saying.
Yeah, we're now cops who, you know, and that Lauren Southern was coming back with me with that, like, well, I have video evidence. I'm like, yeah, you go to rallies to videotape yourself inciting people to, you know, to shout you down. And,
right,
and then that's what you report on are incidents that you make happen. So, yes, that's going to be caught on video. I want to be very clear-eyed about this pattern. I think that it's a real mistake to laugh off.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree
Ezra
with you.
Ezra and Lauren Southern.
Yeah,
you
look,
know?
Like, these, you know, Ezra is he has a huge audience. For that fact alone, we need to pay attention to what he's saying and how he says it and what arguments he's making. And, I mean, the media is consistently accused of making the mistake of doing exactly that, brushing off people that, not that they disagree with, but that who hold ideas that are somewhat outside of the current mainstream, let's say.
Well, let's just call it what it is. This is a tactic that we just saw play out to a disastrous end with Trump. And I have these flashbacks of seeing Trump sitting there at the correspondents' dinner. And as Obama rips on him,
yeah,
and he sits there and we made fun of him,
yeah,
as he sat there not smiling.
Yeah.
Not going to give them like, yeah, I'm in on the joke. Yeah, you can make fun of me. He looked like a petulant child.
Yeah.
And he's like, you can have your fun today. And in this context, by your rules, mm-hmm, I'm the clown.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to take this sneering derision you, mm-hmm, have towards me, and I am going to weaponize it against you.
Absolutely. Look, I mean, there is to some extent derision in the way that things like the rebel rallies are covered. It happens. It happens because people go and they go like, I don't know how to handle this, and I'm not really sure what I'm seeing. So I'm going to use this the first available emotion, which is kind of like, wow, this is weird. And Twitter, unfortunately, amplifies that emotion to make it sort of reflect or seem like it's reflecting a genuine, you know, feeling, whereas it's a trite, kind of pithy medium, and that's what it's going to generate.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at the coverage of these events, I think, you know, I mean, again, like, everyone's going to think that I'm biased, but I would say that they're fairly balanced. Like, the coverage, for example, let's say Chris Alexander, who is the conservative MP who's running for former conservative MP who's running for leadership. The week before, he'd been at a different rebel rally in Edmonton.
Lock her up.
Yeah, and when the chant "Lock her up" began, he didn't stop it and he didn't join in. But the initial tweets and videos about that did slightly misconstrue his reaction. But if you looked at the coverage of it later, a day or, you know, later in the afternoon or a day or the next day, it was clear. It was made clear that he did not partake in the chant. It was just that he was there and he didn't put an end to it. Now, so what I'm saying,
he did more than that, actually. He was pumping his arm up and down, like conducting,
He was moving his arm in a circular motion. Whatever that means, I don't know. But the point is that, like, look, the point I'm making is that it was presented in the coverage afterward as relatively objective. It was not, nobody covered it saying Chris Alexander was pumping up the chants and chanting "lock her up" and making people like scream. That didn't happen. So the problem I'm getting around to saying is that, like, if you approach anything by all the information you're getting is on Twitter, you're going to have a really weird view of the media because it's much more off the cuff. It's not as considered as coverage goes.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, if you consume Twitter all the time and you think, like, you know, this is what reporting is, then you may have an inaccurate position on what actual news looks like when it's presented in a paper or in its full format.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
It does. I think it's, you know, this whole tactic of...
I'm not excusing it. I'm just saying that, like, look, I think that this is kind of how it happens. This is how the mentality builds.
Well, it's seizing upon the one grain that might be used to support your thesis.
Right.
If your thesis is that the mainstream media hates you...
Absolutely. It's completely without context, so you can make your own.
Then you can find it, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, and it was observed, like, I think Ethan Cox from Ricochet, or somebody from Ricochet, if I'm not mistaken, said something to the of this deplorable tactic of Ezra's is an effort to silence other journalists who might criticize them. I don't believe that that's true.
No.
And I think Ezra does not care, or rather, I think he cares very much. Like, he wants to get the negative press.
Sure.
He's not trying to stop journalists from coming and giving him negative press. Because it's when he gets the negative press, it feeds back into this loop.
If he gets press, period, it feeds back into his loop. He can, like, look, you can get any coverage you want, and as an opinion generator, you are then able to spin that in however, in whatever manner you please, right? That's allowed. That's what he does. Fair enough. But others are allowed equally to take up contention with how that was spun and what parts of it were taken out of context or recontextualize in inaccurately, should that be the case.
Everything that I get accused of for jumping into this, oh, are you white knighting, you cuck? And you know what?
Yeah.
I am not her white knight. I am here looking out for myself.
Yeah.
I do not want to be, and I will not be, a prop in Ezra's or anyone's political theatrics. So I'm done with making fun of this stuff.
Yeah.
I don't have any humor about this. Like, it's disgusting. It's gross. Using this young woman as collateral damage.
Yeah.
And he can't legitimately discount the possibility of this turning into something real and physical. I mean, it's already real. Like, to have the, you know, it makes me sick that by way of introduction to this industry, the cost of a young person doing her job while she's in school doing some reporting for an AM station is that her name now on Google is going to is associated with, she's a liar, a scum sucker. That itself is a damage. When he went from this ironic distance of, like, oh, well, let's find the real killer.
Mm-hmm.
I've got $1,000 bounty to find this death threat.
Mm-hmm.
And very quickly that was about it. No, I think she's a liar. And he started to tag his tweets about her fake news.
Yeah.
Now, it was only weeks ago that fake news came to our consciousness as something that, proven by data, it was an inordinately right-wing phenomenon that benefited Trump. So what we're seeing here is it's like everything in Canada. The playbook has been written by Breitbart. The rebel is following it, and I know what's happening.
There is another side to this story, however, that the other thing that we saw in the United States, and thanks probably mostly in part to the fact that there are no local papers anymore, is that the core complaints of a large constituency may not have been represented in the media the way they should have been. Let's just say.
Absolutely.
Okay?
And that's true in Canada, too.
And that
too.
Is true in Canada.
The overlap between Ezra's message and some of what Canada Land points out,
right.
The media has been failing Canadians.
Sure.
And Western Canadians are especially, like the endorsements that came through post media to those electorates going completely against their wishes.
Right.
They have been treated shabbily.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen that that's a powerful message to say. The media is not doing their job.
Absolutely.
Canada Land needs but you know, there's a very different objective.
Absolutely,
there's
a different
play. And
I'm
seeing a dangerous. Like I think that they are a dangerous organization. Okay, well that was fun and spirited.
Mm-hmm.
And now let us take a moment to note duly
right.
some things that have popped across our feeds.
Okay.
This past week.
Yes.
Colin,
shall I go first?
Please.
Okay. So on the front page of the Globe and Mail, there's a picture of Gord Downie looking very emotional, and there is another man standing with him who is an Aboriginal leader. And the caption says, Gord Downie weeps during an honoring ceremony at the Assembly of First Nations Special Chiefs Assembly in Gatineau, Quebec. There was a follow-up story on A8 on the front section with another photograph attached to it with Gord Downie and Prime Minister Trudeau. And again, two other people in the photo who are Aboriginal. One was Jody Wilson-Raybould, who's a minister. And again, the caption did not name the Aboriginal people in the photo, but just Justin Trudeau and Gord Downie.
I mean, in the first picture, Gord Downie and this Aboriginal leader we're just calling this the Aboriginal leader.
Let's be honest. I don't know who he is.
Usually when you have two people in a photograph on the front page of the newspaper, you would tell us who both of them are.
Well, yeah, so this is part of the conversation. Like, look, putting together a newspaper is difficult. You do it late in the day and you kind of work with what you have. So in this case, potentially the photographer also did not know who this person was and sent in the photo with a caption that
Gord Downie. Globe and Mail. This was a public event on stage. Downie was being celebrated.
Right.
You could find out the name of the human being.
So the point is that, like, this is not necessarily about the Globe and Mail to me. I mean, it is in this particular sense, like this specific example, sure. But in a larger sense, when we all talk about what Gord Downie is doing and he's bringing all this attention to Indigenous issues, et cetera, and we're like, isn't this great? And he should be hailed, blah, blah, blah. And then the people who he is talking about are literally ignored by one of the nation's largest publications, probably not intentionally, but the fact is that when Indigenous people in this country say, look, you know, we are routinely ignored by the establishment, well, they're correct in this instance. They are entirely ignored. Was it up to somebody from the Globe and Mail to look up those people's names? I don't know. Maybe they have a policy of that. I have no idea. Maybe it's like, they just name the most famous people in it and then they just go with it. I don't know. But the larger issue remains that if we're actually going to heed all these messages that Downie has been putting out in the last few months, it sort of starts here. It starts with stuff like this. Like, let us take the time to find out who the Indigenous people are with him in this photo and put them front and center as much as him in this story.
But as you would with any other human being.
This is
in
my
the photograph,
point. Yes.
It's not special treatment.
Right. This
and
is my point.
Like, you can almost, like, the only way this stuff is getting on the front page is if Gord Downie makes it his, like, dying mission to bring attention to it. And even if that happens and they're there with
him
on the front
happen.
Page, we won't write the person's name.
I mean, I think as an industry, you have to be aware more than ever of the structures that you sort of reinforce through your work, whether you're doing it on purpose or not. Like, sort of something like this, maybe take the time.
Duly noted.
Duly noted.
I'm going to talk about a moral stand that the Obama administration has made. The United States will be curtailing some of their sales of arms to Saudi Arabia because Saudi Arabia is in this illegal war in Yemen and they've killed 10,000 people. Stephen Chase, who was on the show talking about his reporting on Canada supplying arms to the Saudis, reports further, following up on his stuff, that we won't be doing that. We are going to continue to supply the Saudis with light armored vehicles, which, also thanks to Stephen Chase, we know have been used to kill people in Yemen. You must have worked with Jerry Butts.
Yes.
Some other people there. A lot of great people you probably worked with who took a... really strong and I think principled stand against what the conservatives were doing in their relationship with the Saudis. And anyhow.
Well, I will not comment directly on
that. You don't got to say nothing,
yeah,
Colin.
That.
All I want to hear you say is duly noted.
Duly noted.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's amazing the things that we tell ourselves to talk ourselves out of getting help. Anybody who's actually gotten help knows that the process of getting things off your chest, of taking your stressors, your problems, and just like not letting them be bottled up, working through just conveying them to somebody, half of the battle is just doing that. You unburden yourself. And you know what? If you have a real mental health professional, no, they don't have magic bullets or magic words that make it all go away. But often they can help you see things a little bit differently and guide you to strategies or tools or to a new perspective that actually does help. As the largest online therapy provider in the world, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. Because you listen to this podcast, you get 10% off of your first month at betterhelp.com/CanadaLand. That's betterhelp.com/CanadaLand. This episode is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAMH. We hear a lot about the opioid crisis. We talk a lot about the mental health crisis. These are serious problems. These problems affect us all. They've affected my life and my community. They're not intractable problems. I don't know what's going to solve them on a policy level, but day to day, helping people, that's what CAMH does. They do it on the ground when people need help, and they do it through research. The team at CAMH gave our team a tour of their facilities, and we were really just blown away by the incredible, heroic work that they're doing every day. They treat everyone with dignity, and their research is seeking and finding real solutions for everyone around the world. Help change mental health care forever. Your support will help CAMH build a future where no one is left behind. Donate at CAMH.ca/CanadaLand to help CAMH treat addiction and build hope.
Okay, before we continue, this episode is also brought to you by Giftagram. The clock is ticking down. You haven't done it yet. You haven't bought all the gifts you need to. And the longer it waits, guys, the worse it's going to get at the mall. You don't want to leave this to the last minute. And you don't have to go to the mall because Giftagram exists. This is an app for your Android or iPhone. You download it. They curate the gifts for you. They're pretty fantastic. And the revolutionary thing here is just how damn simple it is to give a gift. It's like three clicks. You pick the gift, you open up your contacts, and you pick the person you want to send it to. They take it from there. They get an email saying that you've bought them a gift, and they fill in the blanks about where they want the gift to be shipped to. Here is the good part for everybody to pay attention to. They are giving you $20. They know that you're going to spend a lot more than $20 this holiday season, and they are convinced that if you use Giftagram, you're going to use Giftagram for a lot of stuff, so they're willing to take the hit. There are gifts on Giftagram for $24. If you use the offer code CanadaLand, that's a $4 gift. They're basically just putting $20 in your pocket. There's no reason not to do this. Download Giftagram on your iPhone or Android. Use the gift code CanadaLand. Okay, this links back, Colin, to our first conversation.
Mm-hmm.
It's an article that you wrote.
An article. Yeah.
Congratulations on launching
Thank
Article.
Thank you. My magazine. Please support us on Patreon.
Your new online magazine?
Yeah.
Where people can go to Article by going to
articlemag.ca.
Okay.
Yep.
Your piece is titled, "What is the Point of Political Journalism in the Post-Truth World?"
Yep.
So I think it speaks directly to what we were saying before, but I want to ask you just like very specifically, why should journalists not retweet Donald Trump? Because sometimes you got a sick burn, or you can prove that he's lying, and there's always a good reason.
It's worked so far.
And he's the president. I guess what I'm about to say he's the president-elect. How are you going to ignore the things he says?
Right.
Why should we not retweet and comment on what he says on Twitter?
In a nutshell, because your data is being scraped every time you do that. The more that you retweet Trump, the more a third party, which is they're continually trawling Twitter and scraping its data, can model that into a picture of you. It sort of gets back to the fake news thing. Fake news, we were all convinced in the first weeks after the election that fake news had played this role in the election by being a very overt
persuasive?
Persuasion tool, right? That, like, people read this stuff, they believed it, and then they went and voted against their interests or whatever, right? And they were like, well, I'm convinced that the Pope endorsed Donald Trump. It's good enough for me, vote. Actually, what happened is a bit more than that. So that was one level. A level below, there's a guy down in the States. He's a professor, and he's sort of looking into this, and he's done some rudimentary research. His basic conclusion is that one level below that, the fake news sites that people were spreading around were not necessarily just about that. They were about collecting data. Third-party companies that sell data to advertisers.
Who's the third party? Who are we talking
about? So third parties are companies that set up that they basically track your cookies. So when you go to a site, there's a little code in your browser that tells the website you were there. That's used to be able to tell the website who you are and to tell advertisers who you are so that they can target ads to you. So the more you go to a site like Amazon, for instance, and you click around, the more you're going to see an Amazon ad for the stuff you clicked on later on.
Sure. If I look at a pair of boots, those same boots pop up in my Facebook.
Correct. Yeah. In the same vein, you can build a behavioral model of the people who visit sites. You can decide what to sell them. But you can also decide to sell them a political message if you wanted to.
So, and you've seen this from the inside. The behavioral modeling is how politics is done.
Behavioral modeling is, yeah. I mean, like, that's how modern campaigns collect data. That's what they use it for. They want to know who is going to pay attention to what message and whose Facebook feed they should, you know, target ads to at what time. In the United States, on DirecTV for a couple of years now, you can sell a political ad within a specific time to a specific household, to a specific user. So
I saw something where somebody actually messaged their ex by buying an ad on DirecTV because the ex had cut them off from every platform,
right?
And they were able to just, like, actually sell an ad, right, that went only to that person's house.
There you go, right? Like, so the takeaway generally is that, like, the fake news sites that were set up are riddled with these third parties, basically, that collect cookies and sell that data to sell advertising.
They're not just making money off of the click and the advertising.
Correct.
They're also selling the data.
Well, piggybacking onto this site,
uh-huh,
are all these things that sell the data to political companies, or companies that would use that data to sell to political political parties in order to target messaging. Does that make
sense?
So
by reading a bunch of political news sites, mm-hmm, I'm putting my name into a bucket of people who is I'm now receptive to a certain political message.
Correct.
That gets sold to a political party. That,
yep,
makes it easier for them to target me.
Correct.
And get me to the polls.
Yes.
How does that make me retweeting Donald Trump a bad thing?
So the same thing happens kind of on Twitter. And the more that you retweet Donald Trump, the more that people notice who's retweeting you and what messages you're collecting. And it's all building a better profile of you continually.
They may be building a profile of Trump critics.
Correct.
Right.
Right.
And then that gets used for...
For whatever people want to buy it to use it for. It's not necessarily that you're going to be sold a bunch of right-wing ads, or that you're suddenly going to be targeted as a Trump supporter or whatever, but it basically is that, like, you need to have a clearer idea of where your data is going, whatever you do online, right? If you retweet someone, you're not just innocently retweeting. You are putting your name into a box, basically.
So a retweet is not an endorsement, but it is a marketing
tactic that benefits third parties. It can be used to market.
Okay, this is terrifying and useless knowledge, because it's almost like saying, don't engage with Ezra with this stuff because you're feeding,
yeah,
the trolls. Okay, so you don't engage with it and he destroys somebody and the atmosphere gets worse and worse. You're sort of, mm-hmm, damned if you do, damned if you don't. How do you engage in a public conversation where, like, surreptitiously, aside from the content and the context of your message, the very fact that you're interacting with this,
yeah,
could be used for purposes
I
that
mean,
are
look,
contrary to your own political,
yeah,
or ideological.
You are kind of damned if you do or damned if you don't. But the point is not to stop necessarily if you don't want to. The point is that you should just be aware of what's going on and be clear about when you choose to do these things and not. Like, I mean, to just randomly retweet Donald Trump is only helping him. It's doing two things. It's dominating the conversation, right? It's spreading his message and sort of pushing away other news outlets as forms of information. And it's, you know, making you more susceptible to direct marketing.
Yeah. So if you're cool with that, have
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it's fine. But look, like, I mean, I think the thing is that, like, I'm almost sort of endorsing never use Twitter. Like, never tweet is, like, a great piece of advice.
No, it's not.
Because... But in some ways, it kind of is, because, like, let's say, okay, Jesse, let's say that you retweet Ezra Levant or someone you hate with a snide comment or an attack. What happens?
They are destroyed by the sheer force of my rhetorical brilliance.
Clearly, everybody will just suddenly be convinced by your argument.
Your argument is, what point discourse? What point conversation?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying, what point discourse on Twitter?
You know, this derision towards Twitter, it's just a sentence machine.
I know, but the problem... No, it's not just a sentence machine. It's really not.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
I hear you.
You can't just say, like, oh, whatever, it's just Twitter. Like, it doesn't matter. We just had an entire conversation about why it matters.
No, it matters because ideas and sentences... I do think that sentences and words matter.
Yes.
But that's why I feel it matters. But not because under the hood there's... this, like, nightmare, you know, marketing machinery.
I would say in the same, my argument would be, like, you just had an ad at the beginning of the show for a service that hides your IP address, right?
Yes.
That makes sure that your data is secure when you're using a wireless connection you don't know about. So let's say you're in Starbucks, for instance, correct?
Oh, you mean TunnelBear.
TunnelBear, yeah, whatever it's called. There are others like it, but let's say that one.
Sure.
Why do you want to use that?
Why would one use that?
Yeah, to make sure your data is secure.
Yes.
Why wouldn't you think the same thing when you're using Facebook or Twitter? Why would you think, like, oh, well, whatever, like, I don't care. My data is not going anywhere here.
Well, I think that when people conceive of a threat by which they would be using a VPN, it's because they are personally feeling liable to fraud.
Fair.
Or they're feeling personally on the hook for whatever behavior they're doing.
Right.
That is different than, I mean, I think that the larger, like, now, like, over a decade-long conversation is that we have yet to make a compelling case to people as to what it costs them.
Right.
To be a part of a marketing machinery, to have their data, anonymized in the hands of other companies.
So
people don't see the liability.
Right. The argument that I would make and have made is that if this truly is an information-based economy, the only thing you have that's of any value is your information. So why are you giving it away for free?
It's been like a month now since reality just became a Black Mirror episode.
But no, seriously, like... And I made this point earlier.
It's gotten a little bit normal. Like this episode would be a very weird episode,
but like,
2 months ago.
Yeah, listen, like if you were, let's say, a voter for, let's say your issue in the U.S. election was, oh well, my economic, I'm being my like the economy has crashed around me and I have no power economically anymore. But all you do is spend time retweeting garbage and going on to these crazy websites that are filled with fake news. You're only undermining your power more because you're literally giving away the only thing that counts as cash, which is your information. Why would you do that? Why would you do that without knowing or without realizing the consequences of that action? By giving away your information, you're becoming less economically important.
That's your Canada Land Shortcuts. I hope you enjoyed it. You can reach me by email at jesse@canadalandshow.com, and I will read what you send me and respond when I can. We are on Twitter at Canada Land. Colin, where can people find you?
On Twitter at CF Organ, at articlemag.ca.
It's a hard thing to start a magazine these days. Go check it out.
Thanks.
Our website is canadalandshow.com. Our crowdfunding site is patreon.com/canadaland. If you haven't listened to The Imposter this week, there is an amazing interview with Owen Pallett. Check that out. I make this show with Katie Jensen. Syndication of Candleland is handled by Russell Gregg. If you like what we do, please support us. Hey, I need you to pay close attention to this message. It is not an ad. This is about Candleland, and this is about you. You need to know that the news crisis is about to get a lot worse. You've heard about the layoffs. We're about to have news closures, and it's very likely that we're going to be seeing the defunding of the CBC. Where are you going to get your information from? What can you do about this? You can support Canada Land. We need you to. And so for this month and this month only, you can become a Canada Land supporter and get everything our supporters get for just $2 a month. That is an almost 80% discount. The clock is ticking on this. It disappears at the end of the month, and then we will not offer it. We need your support. We need to keep news coverage alive in Canada. Go right now to canadaland.com/join. And thank you.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.